Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. I was flipping through some TV channels a few nights back and landed on a Sixers home game. And the first thing I noticed was the crowd at the Wells Fargo Center. The center was packed. And as a matter of fact, last Friday was apparently a sellout. And while an 18-29 record might not get fans in other cities overly excited, for those who followed the Sixers, it seems like a soaking rain after a long drought. They were, after all, 10-72 all of last year. So this hour, we're going to take a look at the Sixers' evolution. And we'll also catch up to what's happening with Philly's other major sports teams, talk about the Super Bowl as well. And as always, his lines are open at 888-477-9499. You can send us an email at radiotimes at whyy.org or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And here with us in studio are Phil Sheridan. He does commentary for ESPN and has covered the Philadelphia sports scene for over 30 years. Welcome back to Radio Times, Phil.
Pleasure to be here.
And Sam Dinellen is a sports columnist with the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Daily News. And he's been around, what, 25
years?
Yeah,
I'm the
Sam?
Kid. I'm the new kid on the block, 25 years.
All right. Well, great to have you with us again as well, Sam. So, as our audience well knows, Kevin Griffin, our engineer, is a Sixers fan, and I was talking to Kevin just the other day about this, and from a fan's standpoint, he says no one saw the turnaround coming, and that it's shocking, and of course, from a fan standpoint, this is in a good way, right? But, you know, the Sixers, of course, again, were 10-72 all of last year. They're 10-5 this January. So, in short, what's happening? Sam?
Well, you have to start, even though now we're doing the secondary part, but you have to start with Joel Embiid. Nobody saw that coming to the level. We didn't see a rookie be that dominant with the amount of minutes that he's been given and be that much of a personality, too. So you go to, you know, you're so disappointed when he's not in playing in the games, whether now he has a knee contusion and before that just to monitor his minutes because he's coming back from 2 years of injury. But if you get the ticket that he is in the game for, that's, you know, you feel really lucky.
Yeah, one might wonder what it would be like, his production would be like if you were in for more than what he's been given, Phil.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, one of the reasons nobody had any expectations was for 2 years he's been hurt. Mm. And at the very beginning of this season, Ben Simmons, who was the number one pick in the draft last year, the guy they were kind of building toward getting the big piece of the puzzle they needed, he got hurt. So it looked like another one of these years where, you know, it's going to be treading water. But Embiid just got them out of the water. He just lifted them right up and has made them an entertaining, competitive, and fun team. And he's just, like Sam said, it's partly personality because he's got one and he shows it and fans love that and they connect to it. But also he's just a really good basketball player. Mm-hmm. And they've been saying all along, you've got to get that player if you're ever going to compete in the NBA. It's very hard to do. It's almost impossible to do if you're stuck in the middle. So they tanked for a few years. But they may have gotten him, and this guy looks like the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, Sam, you were saying you were writing that he plays the crowd like Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I haven't seen this much, if at all. They had a game recently against Toronto where they inbounded it to him so that he would be fouled. We're used to the tall guy avoid giving the tall guy the ball at any because he can't shoot free throws. He went up. Not only did he go up and shoot the two clinching free throws, but walking up the court, he's doing, you know, waving his hands to the crowd and putting his hands to the air and really just playing them. Yeah. You know, and Philip was talking before the show about how he's a social media guy. That really became an event while he was injured. I really think this is a weird situation where we have a fan emerging from our fandom over the last 2 years, very tuned into the whole lines like the process and stuff, who's now on the court. He totally gets the frustration of the fans over the last 2 years, and he totally gets the conversation about the team.
Yeah. Well, on another angle here, you recently wrote about Embiid and brought, well, the late, great Wilt Chamberlain into the conversation. Yeah. Is there a comparison here?
Well, you know, what I said, and it was for a blog yesterday, was that I was one of the last people to talk to Wilt before he died. And people will tell you, Sonny Hill will tell you this, he was always more proud of his athleticism, more proud of the track and field accomplishments he had done at Overbrook and at Kansas. Basketball he had to play it because of his size. But he had all these ridiculously great physical tools about him that people like to discount by mentioning his size. So when you watch Embiid out on the court, they throw a bad pass to him at his toes. He picks it up with like three fingers on each side and drills a three-pointer outside of the three-point line. He, you know, he runs into the paint, gets stripped, steals it back from the guard, puts it back up. He does so many athletic things that, as Gerald Henderson said recently, wait till he actually learns how to play the game better when he doesn't waste as much energy doing it. But right now, it's like just watching this, just energy all the time.
A lot of fun. A lot of fun. We've got comments coming in already. So we've got a tweet from somebody calling himself Milk Boy Larry, who says, I haven't smiled this big watching the Sixers since the great Allen Iverson. And then Daniel tweets, thankfully, the Sixers have the right to swap picks with the Kings and have the right to the Lakers pick. Bring on the wins. Phil?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's been a long, ongoing, arduous process up until now. The last 3 years have been basically unwatchable basketball-wise.
Yeah.
But if you're interested in how things are put together and how teams go about their business, the Sixers have been fascinating because they've been very different. And all these little moving parts, draft picks and trades that are coming, I mean, yeah, they're the best player that they've added hasn't played yet. And Ben Simmons, I mean, Embiid may end up being the best player, but Ben Simmons is the guy, the number one pick they got last year. That was what they were building toward. But they still have more to come. So yeah, the foundations are being laid for something very special. What we're seeing now is really fun and exciting because of the contrast of the last few years.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the reward for the pain of the last couple of years. But it's also the promise of a really bright future.
Well, do we have any idea of when Simmons is back, when he's healthy? And when he's back, what does this mean? Yeah, stop laughing.
No, because
everybody asks that question.
When can he be and when will he be? It's a very similar question to what's happened with Embiid and what's happened with Okafor. You know, it's when will they decide to, you know, to Milk Boy's point about the draft picks, for years, that was, last several years, that was part of whether somebody played or not, whether they wanted to win or not. Well, they're a little insulated from that now because Sacramento's trending downward and has a big bunch of problems. They lost their guard, and the Sixers just beat them, and the Lakers pick is there too, so it's not that incumbent on them to get those picks. Plus, as Phil said, you have Ben Simmons. When and if he plays, they become an instant contender, you know, and maybe not a championship team, but an instant contender. So do you let him – you saw the benefits of it with Embiid for 2 years. Do you let him recover the way you and I would recover from an injury like that, where we just
take it,
rather than recover the way we're used to watching an athlete recover, which is, okay, he's ready.
Okay, so let's get to the next question, one that's been floating around, you know, and you kind of alluded to this. Could too much winning affect the next draft pick? I mean, is that something that they have to think about?
I don't think so. I think at this point, it is so much better for this team to actually experience winning, learning how to win. One of the great things, untold stories in a lot of ways nationally, is that Brett Brown, who had to preside over these three miserable years in the past, has actually put together a team that can play the game, can, you know, kind of complement each other, that kind of thing. And, you know, that process is actually important. I mean, acquiring talent is important, and they've been doing that, and they're going to continue to do that. But having guys learn to play together and learn to win, I mean, the NBA, at that level, I mean, there's a lot of great talent, a lot of great players have a lot of ability. They can jump, they can shoot, they can do all those things. But to get a team together that can actually win and out-muscle and out-will another team, that takes a little time.
Yeah.
And I think that process right now is more important to this long-term success of the franchise than just tanking for draft picks is.
Well, to Phil's point, they've won three games without Embiid. Well, Embiid's nursing a knee, and some will say the Sixers are overprotecting that knee with the All-Star game coming up. But to that first question, they don't have to worry about the draft pick. They're going to flip with the Kings. If the Kings are equally bad or worse, they get the Kings. The Lakers are in there too. So they really don't have to worry about tanking this year or winning and losing. And the other, you know, there's a great book, Nobody's Fool, where the guy says to Sully at one point late in the – Sully, when your luck changes, it really changes. You know, it's a story kind of about a downtrend loser guy. This is exactly what's happened to the Sixers, is when their luck changes, it's – Ben Simmons, we were worried about his makeup, whether he was willing to walk into this big city, you know, and be this focal point in this star. There was discussion whether he was reticent or not. Well, guess what? He doesn't have to do that anymore. We have our marquee star. We have the funny guy after the game. We have the interview. Ben just has to be Ben.
Yeah.
And that nobody saw that. I didn't see that coming, certainly.
There's a sigh of relief from Sixers fans across the Delaware Valley. Well, all right. So, but let's bring, you know, Sam Hinkie into the conversation, though. Trust the process. Of course, he was out last year. Do we owe him at least some credit here as the process unfolds?
I think the sports is filled with the GM that set it up for the next GM. I mean, we all talk about Pat Gillick with the Phillies, and it probably doesn't happen without Pat Gillick because Ed Wade had a real hard time, particularly in-season trades. But Ed Wade is the guy who drafted that core group. Ed Wade was the GM for that. And Ed Wade, to Phil's point about Brett Brown taking it on the chin, Ed Wade had to take it on the chin and then got them up to 85, 86 wins for his last several years. He was not a bad GM. He just couldn't get them over the hump.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Brett Brown. How did he manage to really get through the last 3 years and get to this point? And how much rope did the Sixers give him?
Well, they've given him enough, and that's one good thing. If they had fired him along with Hinkie, or gotten rid of Hinkie last year and Brett Brown, that would have been kind of a travesty of everything that they've been trying to do, it seems like. But you know, the thing about coaching in almost every sport and every pro level is that it ultimately comes down to who are the coach's players, what kind of talent does he have. So Brett Brown could not have coached any better and won many more games with the team that he had for the last few years. Sure. That was just not going to happen. You need talent and you need great players. And, you know, it's like with the Eagles, you watch Chip Kelly come in and do pretty well at first and then get rid of all the talented players that he had in DeSean Jackson and LeSean McCoy and Jeremy Maclin. And just, you know, all the great talent goes out the door and all of a sudden the team can't win anymore. So he's a good coach, but, you know, Brett Brown is turning out to be a very fine coach. Now when we see him actually being able to coach really good players, you're going to find out exactly, you know, whether he can be an elite-level coach or not. But the fact that he's still here is a testament to the team sticking with that part of the process, such as it was. The Hinkie thing is another piece of that, obviously. I was never a big fan of the whole idea of tanking myself. It's just it just goes against everything that sports is really supposed to be about.
It's depressing.
And doing it for as long and as committed as they were to it, and as bad as it got, I thought that kind of overextended the definition of even what acceptable tanking would be in the NBA. So, but you can't really fault the results so far. It would have been nice to see Hinkie's plan, but there are things that they've done this year that I'm not sure they would have done if Hinkie had been the GM.
We got about 30 seconds to the break. So 20 of their next 30 games are away. Can they keep it up, Sam? Do they keep it up?
I'm a 10 and 5 clip? Probably not. But the thing that I think everybody who's been through this Sixers ride is excited about is they can keep it up. That you tune into the fourth quarter now. You know, you've been out and you come back at 9 o'clock at night. You know to tune into the fourth quarter. You wouldn't even think about doing that in previous years. So that's going to continue. There, and it depends, to your question of a few times ago, is Ben Simmons there for any of that ride? If he is, I'd say sure.
All right. Well, stay tuned. All right. We're talking about the Sixers. We'll talk about the Phillies, the Flyers, the Super Bowl, the Eagles, much more here on this sports version of Radio Times. We've got Sam Donnellan in studio with us, along with Phil Sheridan, and we're taking your calls and comments at 888-477-9499. Tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, and we are joined this hour by Sam Donnellan, sports columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Daily News. Phil Sheridan is a commentator for ESPN, and both have been covering the Philadelphia sports scene for decades. And we're also taking calls at 888-477-9499. You can send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And we started the hour talking about the resurrection of the 76ers. We'll spend a couple more minutes on the Sixers before we move on to the Super Bowl. But we spent a bunch of time talking about Joel Embiid. And really, there are some other players to take a look at, too. And we were talking off mic about TJ O'Connell. So
You were just saying, Sam.
Sam?
Yeah, he was a backup. He was a backup to a guy.
Yeah, nobody expected anything.
Yeah, he was
from
a backup to a guy who really is a backup himself. The backup gets hurt. TJ comes in. Mm-hmm. He's been the point guard for this month. I mean, he came in, I think, December 20th, and he talks to play. He really acts like a point guard out there. And so Brett Brown has been ushered in point guards left and right back to Sam Hinkie. Sam Hinkie always use those guys as trade bait and poker chips. So Brett never, you know, every coach will tell you it starts with the point guard when you're when you're coaching basketball. Brett really never had a steady presence like that. Now this guy, this undrafted, unheralded, he looks, they say he's 6'2", but he looks like he's about 5'7" when he's out there. He's, you know, he's really run that team very well from a point guard standpoint.
So depth of talent. Who else?
Well, I mean, one of the interesting things, and I think the McConnell thing is a good example of why this is so strange, what's been going on here, is that for the last few years, they've been basically drafting a center in the first round. And it's like everybody in the NFL knows you have to have a great quarterback to win. But if an NFL GM went out and drafted a quarterback in the top 10 of the draft every year for 3 years, he'd be fired. I mean, he would be committed to asylum probably, because that's not what you do. So Hinkie was always about, you know, was, you know, assembling assets was like the buzzword for this. But it wasn't about building a team at that point. It was about just assembling as many, you know, marquee-type players as you can, and maybe trade them later, maybe build a team around them, see how all the pieces end up fitting. But it was about getting pieces almost randomly, it seemed like, not building an actual basketball team. And what they're doing this year is a little bit of that. And McConnell is as Sam said, is a great, a very important part of any basketball team is the point guard, who's going to run the show, the guy's going to run the team on the floor. The coach just stands there, but the point guard actually makes it happen. Yeah. I mean, the great Sixers team of the past, they had Maurice Cheeks, for example, when they won the title, you know, back in 83. That guy, you know, they had Moses Malone and they had Julius Erving, they had great players, but Maurice Cheeks may have been the most important player in terms of how they actually got the out on the floor and won games every night. And you're seeing that now. They're actually building a team as opposed to just assembling the tallest basketball players they can find.
All right. So one more quick question to you, Sam, before we get to the phones. As you write, and I think you mentioned before, they're not championship material yet. When?
Well, they don't have as long a road as other organizations do in other sports, because they've got to find three stars and then the pieces around him. We haven't even gone into all the other cool pieces that have shown up. Nerlens Noel being a really good rim protector from a guy we thought could be a rim protector. So pieces are showing up for them. They could flip it pretty quickly. I mean, they could be in a couple of rounds of playoffs as soon as next year. And that, the way I look at the landscape, that would put them ahead of the other three pro sports organizations right away. I know we all talk about the Flyers, and I do too, and anybody can win in the NHL and all that stuff, but the Flyers really are a bunch of young defensemen maturity away from being any kind of dynastic presence.
Okay, Flyers up next, though. First, let's get to some calls. Steve in New Jersey, welcome to Radio Times.
Good morning, Perry.
Hi.
Great conversation. I think the basketball gods might be at work here, because if the Sixers get the ultimate draft day coming up, they may be sitting there at number 4 with the Lakers pick. They may be there at number 8 or 9 with the Kings pick. And the Boston Celtics are going to be sitting there in all likelihood with the number 1 pick from the Nets. My question is that if you know that Fultz is the guy you need that third superstar, and he's sitting there, and the Celtics say, hey, we'll give you number 1, but we want Okafor, the number 4, and the number 8. Do you do it?
Why not? I mean, we just talked about, my opinion is, presuming you have Simmons, presuming Embiid stays healthy, presuming that you like what you've seen of Nerlens Noel, why wouldn't you do that? You can't play 10 guys anyway. That's been part of their problem. So I would say yes.
Yeah, the whole process was built on the idea that you have to find that 1 or 2 or 3, you know, elite, top-level players. If you can get that final piece for some of the assets you build up, that's absolutely what you do. I mean, the 8th pick in the draft can be a great player. I mean, you can, you know, you can end up with Steph Curry if you're drafting somewhere around there, and you can win championships that way. But if you can get an absolute elite player and add it to the mix, that's a lot more important than adding 3 or 4 good players or okay players.
All right. Thanks, Steve, for the call to Radio Times. We have an email from David. He says, I've been impressed with the way the 76ers play the game. Most shots are taken after multiple passes of the ball. So the 76ers have a great foundation to build upon. If better players buy into this foundational way of play, the 76ers will quickly become playoff contenders. And that pretty much, I mean, you said maybe next year, Sam.
Yeah, but to his point, one thing that people always say, oh, they're passing the ball so well. They tried in previous years. It just got intercepted, you know, in the first set.
That's a small problem.
And the other night when they got blown out, that's exactly what happened. They were throwing it to the other guys over and over and over again. I mean, so talent sometimes dictates whether you can move that ball around or not. I mean, they all, when they practice against nobody, that's every team does that. It's just when the other guys are trying to take it away from you that it doesn't always look as Harlem Globetrottery as it should.
Yeah. All right. Well, on to the Flyers, at least for the moment. Carolina with the win last night, 5-1. Mm. That shouldn't have happened. So, you know, we're talking about momentum going into the break, and they'd won, what, 3 straight? And Was it a shaky three straight?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're just not that – they're not there yet. And so they're going to have games and then series of games like this where they're, you know, they're just not quite at the level they should be.
They're clinging to that wild card spot.
Yeah, that's basically where they are as a team. And that's – you know, to go back to the Sixers for a moment, the idea of the whole process thing was to get yourself out of that you know, middle ground that's so hard to get in and out of in pro sports, but especially the NBA. In hockey, you can do it in different ways than in other leagues. But so there's hope for the Flyers, and there are pieces in place for them to get better as they get experience and things like that. But they are right now one of those middling teams that's going, you know, they're going to look great one night and look really bad the next night. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get great goaltending one night and shaky goaltending the next night. And they're just not an elite team yet.
Yeah. Face of the Flyers, Wayne Simmonds, MVP of Sunday's All-Star Game. First Flyer to win the MVP
Since Reggie Leach, only the second overall, I think,
How many decades are we talking?
Yeah, since the Broad Street Bullies. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, he's a really neat story, too, that's getting obscured a little bit by the Embiid story. Is Wayne Simmonds was traded here as one of three pieces for Mike Richards. And it was kind of, he's a nice player, third line guy, get you some goals, defend the other, you know, he had some speed. He's really developed into, as you said, not only the face of them, and the face not just because of his productivity. I mean, Claude Giroux is still the captain, he's still out there.
Sure.
But the way he plays, his willingness, again, I'm from the media, so I do value this, his willingness to stand in front, you know, and rip the team when they're bad and talk honestly about things and take his criticisms well. You know, those kind of guys are, you know, people think, oh, every athlete's like that. They're hard to find.
He's only 28.
Yeah. Well, in hockey terms, that's 35. It really is. I mean, he'll tell you that himself. My body is 35, you know.
I was looking for, you know, a good long run to build. All right. So
he's in his prime, for sure.
He's in his prime. Yeah. All right. So, So Sam Carcidi, I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly, writes that the Flyers are 5 games out of a playoff spot at last year's All-Star break. Is the difference between this year and last, is this significant? And what might this tell us about the team, Phil?
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I mean, they're definitely on a slow build to get where they want to go. And it's indicates that they're heading in the right direction. They have not done anything that's going to try to, you know, help them win 10 more games this year, but maybe compromise the future. So they're not doing that kind of thing. It's a slow build. It's, as Sam said, you get these young defensemen that they have, get the group together and let them mature, which is kind of, again, not to keep coming back to the Sixers, but that's kind of what you're seeing with these teams. You know, all these guys we're talking about with the Sixers are all 22 or 23. I mean, you're talking about kids, really. So are they going to be good? Well, they're already really good, some of them. And as a team like that grows, you know, these are team sports. And hockey, even more than the NBA, is a more of a team concept, and players have to learn to play together. They have to learn how to grow themselves within a team concept. So you're seeing that happen with the Flyers, and it's not dramatic and it's not flashy, but it's definitely promising because it's not, you know, it's heading in the right direction. That seems to be clear from what you're seeing now. Whether they're, you know, going to, with this group of guys, actually get to an elite level, that remains to be seen. But they're still getting in the right direction toward that.
And yet, for fans, how long has the drought been?
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'm starting to believe the Flyers are a little bit of fool's gold, and here's why: the two best defensemen are young. One's in his second year; the other one's a rookie. At least the two defensemen that they see as big pieces of their future. The other defensemen that they see as big pieces of their future are still playing in the minors. So the core of 4 or 5 defensemen aren't even all here together playing. They also have 6 goalies in their system.
6
that I think they're hoping to find their, you know, future goalie of their dynasty from that 6, not from the 2 that are playing right now. Now, if defense wins championships and you start from the back end going forward, we may be seeing not just a transitional part, but pieces that won't be around much when and if that happens. But it, you know, anybody can make the playoffs. But if you're talking about a team that resembles the Blackhawks or resembles one of the teams that are in the talk, the discussion for winning one every year, I think the Flyers are more than a year or two away. I think
it's been, what, 40 years?
Oh, well, yeah, but they've been in the finals.
They,
you know, not to channel my inner Ed Snyder, rest his soul, but Ed would always tell you how many finals they've been into, how often they make the postseason. Okay. So they are successful. They're the Red Sox. They're a successful franchise that just hadn't won in a long time.
All right. Sam Dinellen, sports columnist with the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Daily News. We've also got Phil Sheridan in studio. He does commentary for ESPN. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 888-477-9499 is the number, or you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. On to the Super Bowl, Patriots-Falcons Sunday night in Houston, Tom Brady versus Matt Ryan, Matty Ice. So Matt Ryan apparently was the best Philadelphia high school quarterback back in 2002, a Penn Charter guy. Anybody have any inkling that this is where he would be in early 2017?
I mean, he went to BC, so I don't think it wasn't just us that didn't have the inkling. I think a lot of major colleges missed on him and missed on Joe Flacco, you know, our two area quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Nobody saw Matt when he was in high school. I mean, he was a great player at that level. I mean, he was a high school star locally, but the idea that he would be an elite NFL quarterback didn't seem obvious at the time. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, so Jeff McLean poses an interesting question in today's Inquirer. Is Tom Brady the greatest quarterback ever?
Well, I wrote that he was, and I wrote reluctantly about a week, maybe 5 days ago, that he was. And you know, the best argument for that is try to name all the receivers that he's been throwing to over this time. Yeah, so, you know, what convinced me, and I've always been a grudging Tom Brady appreciator, is that his running backs, you can't remember too many of them. They run him in. They pick up, you know, free agents. They make trades that seem inconsequential at the time. They, you know, they add a guy like Edelman, who's not considered much, and you know, he turns him into a star. Wes Walker comes from Miami. It just seems like he makes the most of the people around him. And when you talk about Montana, there's Hall of Famers there. You talk about Bradshaw, there's Hall of Famers there. It seems like he's done the most with the least.
Yeah. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And when we think about it, I mean, it's been 15 years since the first Super Bowl the Patriots won with Tom Brady as a young, you know, it was a sixth-round pick. Nobody saw him coming either. Talk about Matt Ryan. You know, Tom Brady was a complete afterthought. Every team in the league passed on Tom Brady multiple times before the Patriots drafted him. So nobody saw that coming. He was not the starter until Drew Bledsoe got hurt. Then he became the starter, won the Super Bowl. And, you know, there's nobody left. That team that won the Super Bowl when Brady was a kid is gone. I mean, they're all – some of those guys are in the Hall of Fame.
Some of the guys have an ESPN, too.
half of them work for ESPN. But, you know, Brady's the only constant. And what the stats he puts up and the way that they win and the way he runs games, it's a combination of incredible ability, excellent coaching around him, and finding the right pieces in place. But he's also just been smart and a winner at a level I can't, you know, there have been quarterbacks like you mentioned, guys like Montana and Bradshaw, nobody over this length of time.
Mm-hmm. So you think he's the greatest quarterback?
I think you could look at a lot of guys, like a guy like Marino, for example, might have had a better arm or been better in some things. But when it comes to winning and being a quarterback and playing the role that a quarterback has to play on a great team, there's never been anything like what Brady's done here, and I guess that by definition makes him the best ever.
Yeah, no one's ever won 5 Super Bowls, no one quarterback, and so a little prognostication here. What do you think's going to happen Sunday night?
I think Atlanta's going to win and win big.
Really?
I do.
Now
why? Because they have almost as good a defense as New England, and I know what I just said about Tom Brady making a lot of a little. They don't have to make – Matt Ryan doesn't have to make a lot of a little. He's got a lot of weapons there. I think – I just think that New England's defense is not a shutdown defense. I think they're going to put points up, and I think they're showing on the NFL Network, Seattle had New England dead to rights. They had 24-14 going into the fourth quarter. I think it might be 31 something like that going into the fourth quarter. And if Brady comes back from that, then nobody ever better ever argue that he's not the greatest.
What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, I've been trying to convince myself. You know, I feel like, you know, you have Bill Belichick as the coach of the Patriots, 2 weeks to prepare. He's going to find some answers for some of those things that the Falcons do well. But at the same time, I look at you know, the Falcons beat the Packers. Aaron Rodgers, great quarterback, maybe better right now than Brady is at the moment. But that level of quarterback, and they blew the Packers out. I mean, the Packers had the advantage in a lot of those areas that the Patriots seem to have the advantages. Good coaching, they've been there before, won a Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers is playing at an incredible level. And the Falcons blew them out. So I'm inclined to think, like saying that the Falcons are wired the right way to kind of with the right pieces in place to beat this Patriots team. It's a neutral field. They're not going to be playing at home. But right now, if I had to put money on it right now, I would bet on the Falcons. But there's still a voice in the back of my head that's thinking about
he might find a way.
Here's a very quick stat that I keep seeing that does mean something to me.
Okay.
Patriots played in a really weak division, in my opinion, in most people's opinion this year. They did not play, I believe this is right, against any quarterback that had a winning, what was the, or was in the playoffs, or is some ridiculous stat. They played a whole bunch of bad quarterbacks to get this defensive ranking. That guy's not a bad quarterback that they'll run into on Sunday.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We've got Sam Donnellan with us here, Phil Sheridan. We're talking about sports. And after the break, we'll head to the Eagles, see what's going on with Carson Wentz and company. If you'd like to join the conversation, 888-477-9499. Spring training's just ahead for the Phillies as well. So keep it here. There's more of the today's sports edition of Radio Times just ahead. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We are looking at Philadelphia sports this hour. We've also been talking about the Super Bowl as well. In studio, Phil Sheridan. He is a commentator for ESPN. He's been around the Philly sports scene for about 30 years or so. And Sam Donnellan is he writes for the Philadelphia Inquirer and also the Philadelphia Daily News. And he's been covering the Philly sports scene for about a quarter century. How's that sound, Sam?
That sounds better than a rookie.
Sounds about right. 888-477-9499. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Or you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And I've been around the Philly scene for a quarter century as well. So there you go.
We're tied.
At least. Okay, so let's go on to the Eagles. Carson Wentz, the quarterback, apparently he's going to be working on some throwing mechanics. I'd read that he might end up with a fellow named Tom House. He was a major league pitcher.
Yes.
Okay, who'd also worked with Tom Brady and Matt Ryan. What do you make of that, Phil?
Well, I think it's a good thing that this is the approach that Wentz is taking. I mean, Tom House has gotten a lot of credit for working with a lot of the top quarterbacks, and you know the mechanics are a little bit different for throwing a baseball and throwing a football. But you know the general approach that House takes is kind of works both ways. And you know these guys credit him. Drew Brees is another one. I think they credit House with helping them a lot. So if guys like that are having the success they're having, and they see Tom House as a big reason for it, and Carson Wentz can benefit from that, that can't be anything but good for Wentz and for the Eagles.
Really. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I got to talk to Tom House. I'm trying to remember when that was and who it was for a few years ago. And his exercises have become sports-specific. So they do mirror each other, you know, if he's working with a pitcher and working with a quarterback. But, for example, I don't know if it was House that Brady worked with on this, but Brady – his arm strength was starting to get weak, and they just did a big special about this, is how he really worked on his mechanics to make up for his weakening arm strength. It's really, you know, sports science has become such a really cool and interesting thing that, you know, I'm anxious to see. We used to talk about a guy being a natural. Well, nowadays, that's not enough, apparently. You've got to be able to, you know, to do it correctly or defenses are going to.
Yeah, it helps to start with the natural, but then you've got to build from there.
Yeah. But would you say Carson Wentz is a natural?
I think there's a lot of natural.
There was talk of that, especially when he, you know, the season started off with such a bang, you know, in the fall. All right. So overall, how would you characterize Wentz's performance as a rookie last year?
Well, I think it was very encouraging. I think it exposed some of the flaws around him.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a big deal. People were fans of the Eagles back in the early 2000s. Donovan McNabb was the young up-and-coming quarterback that they brought in. They went to the playoffs every year for a couple of years there and lost in big games. And they never really had a wide receiver that was really, you know, basically a compelling player, a difference-making kind of player for all those years. And then, of course, they got Terrell Owens for that 1 year, went to the Super Bowl, and you saw what Donovan McNabb was missing for the first 5 years. And when I was covering the Eagles for the Inquirer back then, and they used to practice at Veterans Stadium, and we used to walk out from the stadium itself out to the practice field out in the parking lot there. So sometimes I would wait outside the door and try to walk with Andy Reid while I was walking out to the field, just if I asked him something that I wanted to get a private moment with him or whatever, just to talk a little bit and catch up. And one time I remember asking him about that. You know, the wide receiver thing seems to be a real problem with this offense. I mean, you have a quarterback. Isn't it going to help him if you, like, improve the wide receiving core? This was probably about 2002 or so. And Andy just said, no, it's all about the offense. You know, it's not really – you can – he said, if you were playing wide receiver, I could get you open in this offense because the scheme was so successful that any wide receiver could be successful in it. And I think he made a big mistake there. I mean, at the time I nodded and thought, okay, you know, he's having success. He knows what he's talking about. But when you looked at it and you saw what happened when they replaced the kind of the mediocre guys with an actual star wide receiver who might have gone to the Hall of Fame next week, you saw the offense just explode. And I think everybody kind of learned from that. Okay. Yeah. That's important too.
Yeah.
And so the reason I bring that up is that Doug Peterson, the head coach, is an Andy Reid disciple. He played for Andy Reid. He coached with Andy Reid. If he has that same idea that, hey, this offensive system is so good, we're not going to need star wide receivers, I think that would be a giant mistake, because this kid has a lot of the raw ability and the mental ability and the mindset that make for successful quarterbacks, but somebody's got to be at the other end of those plays.
Sure. Well, so the draft is what, at the end of April? Is it too soon to start talking about what they should be looking for? Maybe never too soon, right?
No, Paul Domowitz did it today, in fact. And somebody will do it tomorrow, and somebody will do it the next day.
Of course. Well, listen, so wide receiver Clemson, Clemson's Mike Williams, that's
your
name
dream.
Has come up.
That's your dream. It's not going to happen, but what a wonderful dream it is. It's that's wishing upon a star. I mean, anybody who watched this guy, particularly in the championship game, he's that guy. He can catch anything that's in the area code of where it's thrown. He's tough. He breaks tackles. He looks like a can't-miss guy.
Too early for Christmas, isn't it?
Well, he's going to be gone before they – you know, they would have to do all kinds of maneuvering and trading and find a dance partner with them. It seems highly improbable.
It's hard to do 2 years in a row. They just went through all that last year to get Wentz. So to get Williams would be kind of a reach.
All right. So, of course, back to the Super Bowl and the Falcons.
What they needed was the Vikings to really stink it up at the end of the season. And unfortunately, they won just a few too many games. Or they would be sitting there in a position because they had flipped picks with the Vikings. They picked up the Vikings pick.
Yeah. Well, some are holding the Falcons up as an example, possibly, to the Eagles in rebuilding. What happened? Back in 2011 when they picked up Julio Jones in the draft.
That's what Jama was writing about today, and he talked to the GM. If you can pick up the paper today, you can read it. Really good story. We was talking to the GM of Atlanta, and they did mortgage. They traded a ton of stuff two years in a row to get him, but they said, to Phil's point of about 5 seconds ago, we needed somebody for Matt Ryan to throw to.
Sure.
You know, and this guy was a can't-miss guy.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're looking at Matt Ryan and talking about he had a great year. People are talking about him being an MVP. But, you know, it's been, almost 10 years. You know, he's been in the league, and he's been a very good quarterback for all of that time.
He's 31, I think.
Yeah, so Eagles fans are as excited as they are about Carson Wentz. They're not really looking for a 31-year-old Carson Wentz to finally get to that level. They're kind of hoping that it happens a little sooner.
Right. A lot of people are hoping
there were
that.
A couple of years where Matt couldn't have gotten there. They were really good in the regular season.
That's true.
Something happened to them in the playoffs. Yeah.
Well, all right, so back to Wentz for 1 minute before we move on to the Phillies. The big thing now is it rest, and how essential is this coming off? Well, you know, we've been out a little bit, but 16 pro football games. What happens to the body, and what do quarterbacks need to do in the offseason, Sam?
Oh, I don't.
All right, we're talking in the science here, okay?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of scary because they're already playing into February. They used to play, you know, to mid-January. And anybody who's watched Premier League soccer knows that one season ends and then a different type of season starts, and some of those guys are playing, you know, round the clock. So I can't imagine football being any longer, and I can't imagine what these guys, you know, hockey guys too, they'll tell you about a month and a half after their last game, their body actually feels like their body again. So I can't even speculate on how, okay. And I think it's different for each guy too.
All right. Well, listen, on to the Phillies. Valentine's Day.
They've had some rest.
Pitchers and catchers, yes, they have. So they return to Clearwater. And Aaron Nola is expected back on the mound. Seventh overall pick in the 2014 draft. On the disabled list last season with a strained right elbow ligament. Is he still considered a centerpiece of the Phillies' effort to rebuild, Mr. Nola?
Yeah, I think he certainly is, I guess. But I guess one of the questions with him is the way he throws, whether that's going to continue to be a problem for his elbow, because he has a motion that kind of strains his elbow by definition of the way he pitches a baseball, mm-hmm. and the way he uses his arm. So that's going to be something they're going to have to either fix with him mechanically or learn to deal with. So I think he's certainly a guy that they consider a piece of what they're trying to do. But, you know, when you have those kinds of injuries for a pitcher, I mean, you always can't count on them completely until, you know, they've shown that they can hold up over the long haul.
Who else for starters? Who's back?
I think everybody is.
Jared Eichhoff?
Right.
Luis Velasquez?
Right. And then, you know, arms that I'm choking at, Jake Thompson, some of the younger arms that they've gotten in their deals when they traded veterans away, and they really surprised me even. They did a really nice job of getting at least projected value. You never know, but at least guys that most of the major leagues thought had a pretty good major league future in return for people such as Cole Hamels and such. So, you know, the one thing about pitching and centerpieces and all that, and it even extends back to that great Braves team that sent three Hall of Famers in. There were three Hall of Famers from that great Braves team, but that two of them came from other organizations. You know, Charlie Liebrandt was traded to get, I think that's right, John, to get John Smoltz, right?
That sounds right, yeah.
And Steve Avery came, I think. Oh, Steve Avery was part of their organization and looked like as good as any of them, but blew his arm out two or three years into it. So you really don't know, you know, these guys, the durability, the strain on an arm and all that, you know, all that sports science stuff. You don't know who's in there for the long haul, and you just have to let it play out. But they have certainly stockpiled enough guys to hope that they can get three, four, or five guys out of that.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well,
with pitchers, it's like when turtles lay like a thousands of eggs on the beach, and like maybe 10 of them are going to make it to the water. That's kind of how it is. Baseball teams have to. You just have to have as many pitchers as possible because their arms go, their shoulders go, their elbows go, and you know. It's an unnatural thing to do to an arm to throw a baseball 95 miles an hour, and that's just there's a lot of attrition on that. So yeah, they've accumulated a lot of them. We just don't know which ones are going to be you know around for the long
haul. And that's a sneaky to the 95 mile an hour. You used to be able to get away two decades ago, not throwing 90 in the 90s. Now I think that's you got to be at least at 90, and if you're going to be at 90, you better have a really cool pitch. That breaks somewhere, you know, 95, and you throw it straight, it's going out of the park. You know, it's just it's amazing that what the stress they're putting on these arms now just to get to that level.
We were talking off mic about Latin America and Philly's forays into recruiting players from Latin America, and they're late to the table in this.
There's been baseball academies before theirs. They just opened up their own. They're very understandably proud. They've spent a lot of money on it. I mean, you know, I hope I never hear another fan tell me that the Phillies are cheap. They, you know, they're playing with the Yankees and the Red Sox and everything else in terms of spending money and everything else. What's interesting to me is that we could be cheering for, you know, they already have a good group of Latin players on the major league roster. If this stuff, which it should, provides dividends, your next championship Phillies team could look radically different from your previous Phillies championship teams, which I think would be a really cool thing.
Yeah. Let's talk about some prospects and kind of right in the near future to watch. J.P. Crawford, Mickey Moniak, Nick Williams, these are some of the names around, you know, some of these guys.
It's not quite the turtle eggs thing there, but I do think that, you know, I could sell you on Nick Williams. I could also tear him up for you. You know, he's given you reason to believe on both sides. Crawford, same thing. I think if he's healthy, I think we all think he's the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly looks like it. Right. But again,
if he's healthy, he's had health issues.
Yeah, well, you know, with this analogy, turtles slow and steady. I'm just hearing Phil, patience. I mean, how long has it been?
You got to catch, in Nemo, you got to catch that wave, you know, that takes you from Australia to California.
Well, the last winning season was in 2011. So what are we talking? How many years here? 5, 6 years?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how much more patience can a Phillies fan expect to have?
Well, the thing about the Phillies fans is they have a championship they can actually point to within living memory for most of their fans.
The last parade.
And many people were actually at the parade. And it's so there's, you know, a little bit of patience that comes with that, I think.
All right. So that said, you know, when do we expect to see some gelling and actually some excitement? I mean, there were moments of excitement last season, just some moments. But, you know, moving forward with this squad, with this team, and, you know, I'm not even going to use the word playoff, although I just did.
If
you had a Phillies fan in studio with us right now, what would you tell him or her?
Well, trust the process.
That's the Sixers.
It's
process.
Similar. It's similar, though. There's a slow build going on here that's kind of similar in that regard. But the thing about the Phillies, the difference with the Sixers is that the Phillies had a championship team. They've tried very hard to maintain it. And when you think about that era and how great those teams were for that little run, it's like, you know, like Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee, who are like big figures during that period of success, they weren't even on the championship team.
Yeah.
They came afterward. So that team was made of, you know, the guys that they had drafted and developed. And it takes a while for those guys. I mean, you know, you didn't expect – I mean, Jimmy Rollins was in the organization for a long time before 2008. So it does take a while. And the guys you mentioned are all guys who are on that track. But Don Brown used to be on that track. And
yeah, he's with the Rockies now, right?
Yeah, he just signed. Yeah. And, you know, that was a guy that was going to, like, step right in and keep the keep his dynasty going. And, you know, it's just – It is a process going through the minor leagues and developing, and they've had the ability to draft some young guys, and there are some promising guys there. But until they actually get to the major league level and produce at that level, you don't really know for sure. So it's hard to put a timetable on what the Phillies are doing.
He was really fun to watch at times. What happened there with Dominic Brown?
Big loopy swing. He might have made a good golfer. I mean, he couldn't get to that ball. You know, they tried every which way to change him.
Yeah, and as good a hitting coach as Charlie Manuel has been over his whole career, he really couldn't get through to Don Brown. And whether that was Charlie's fault or Dom's fault is something both sides
those guys, there was a span where he did shorten it for a very, you know, he actually made an all-star team. But I think when you have a long swing, you trend to that, so you have to constantly force yourself back away from it. I just don't think he was mentally capable of making the adjustment for over the long haul.
Yeah. Also, by the way, before we wrap up, I do have to get a union mention in, and since we're at the end of the show, I will say that the season officially opens in early March. Last season, they grabbed the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, so let's see what happens this year.
Go Union!
Yeah, they're active. I mean, they're trying to add the right kind of players. Yep. So, you know, it's interesting to watch.
All right. Well, we'll be following it all here at Radio Times, and Phil Sheridan, as always, it was a pleasure. Phil is a commentator for ESPN and a longtime Philadelphia sports reporter.
Yeah, 30 years and covered one championship team the whole time.
Same one.
Sam Donnellan.
25 and the same one.
Our thanks to you as well,
Thank
Sam.
You.
Columnist, sports columnist with the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Daily News. And don't forget, visit our Facebook page, give a listen to our podcasts. It's easy to get there. Just head to whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Thanks so much for joining us for Radio Times. Thanks.